Right, Shishi Radha Madhava Astasaki Ki Jai. Shri Chaitanya Chandraya Mandir Ki Jai. Narayanam Namaskrityam.
Narayanam Namaskrityam.
Naram Chaiva Narottamam.
Naram Chaiva Narottamam.
Devam Sarasvatim Vyasam.
Devam Sarasvatim Vyasam.
Tato Jayam Mudirayat. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Om Namo Bhagavate
Vasudevaya.
So we're still continuing with our reading of the introduction to Srila Prabhupada Chaitanya Charitamrita. And I can hear somebody typing on their keyboard there. It's very interesting. Yeah. Yeah. And so I guess we can continue with this. So this, of course, is the introduction. The preface of the book tells us why it's written, what's expected from the audience, what are the qualifications of the
muted.
Of the author.
Unmuted.
You know? And Prabhupada says in the preface, we have to know what people need in the modern world. And he says that people have become divided by this, I would say by industrialization, we've become very impersonalized and divided, and we don't see the commonality amongst other people. And so he said Srimad Bhagavatam will allow us to reestablish this personal feeling between not only human beings, but also between different species of life. Yeah? And then the introduction, he starts off, of course, comparing the absolute truth to the cause of all causes, that God is causing everything, and so it's control, supreme controller compared to the cause of all causes. Because some people think that God is more powerful than the devil, but they don't know where the devil came from. Yeah. So the other conception is of God as the cause of everything. So this is, pretty much, as I was noticing, the beginning of the introduction. It is a kind of like an introduction to the first verse. And when we get to the first canto, we're going to discover the first chapter, first canto. Something like 40% of the whole first chapter is those first two, three verses like that, with very long, you know, purports talking about all the concepts available in those first two, three verses. The first three verses probably calls the prelude, like that, you know. The first one describes what is this world, its problems. The second one describes how to go to the spiritual world, that Srimad Bhagavatam is the means. And the third one describes that the Srimad Bhagavatam is more than that. It takes us not just to liberation, but it takes us to relationship with Rasaraj. Mm-hmm. So the preface, the introduction, it starts off talking about this, about you know, comparison of God as the supreme controller and comparison of God as the cause of all causes, which is a higher conception. Prabhupada calls it the summum bonum. Then, 35 pages, I think, is the biography of Lord Chaitanya. And Prabhupada titles it a short biographical sketch, something like that, of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the ideal preacher of Srimad Bhagavatam. Because Lord Chaitanya is Chana avatar, he's covered avatar, and so he doesn't manifest himself so much, sometimes, as an incarnation, but he wants to be identified as a teacher, like that. Who is Lord Chaitanya? Ah, he is our teacher, like that, yeah? And he's teaching us the science of Krishna. Prabhupada says it's difficult to enter into Srimad Bhagavatam without the mercy of Lord Chaitanya. But I would say, you know, probably we'd all kind of agree, it's almost impossible to enter into Srimad Bhagavatam without the mercy of Lord Chaitanya. This biography is in Spanish. It's published as a separate book. And it's so nice. It's just a little book, and you feel so gratified giving it to somebody, you know. And also, I think it matches pretty much a biography that Bhaktivinoda Thakur did. You know, very similar biography like that. So it's very wonderful if somebody says, well, I know Aurobindo, I know Dayananda Saraswati, but who is Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu? And if you've got a biography I could read like in one evening, you say, yeah, here it is, you know. And so then we can always like distribute this. Vedabase.com. You can go right there and send people the links, you know, to the biography. Very nice, you know. So anyway, it's describing, it's also very nice to write your own biography of Lord Chaitanya, you know. But it describes how, and generally, Lord Chaitanya's function and activity, why he came in general. Then it's going into detailed explanation. And of course, there are many, his advent was very important, very specific, why Lord Chaitanya appeared as a Yuga avatar, why he appeared as his own internal reasons to taste and relish the mood of the Brijbasis, the mood of the Gopis, the mood of Radharani, like that, try to understand it, you know. And then, of course, it goes into specific pastimes of Lord Chaitanya as a child. I should check in here. Reality check. Ramananda, can you still hear me?
Yes. I muted everybody because it's a lot easier like this.
Yeah. Only thing is, I remember last time I gave that 45-minute class. It was so nice and quiet, but it was because I was disconnected. So I'll check in every now and again. Or like that.
Do you see the chat? I see the screen.
I slid the chat over because otherwise it covers up the screen. Like that. Yeah.
Oh, really?
Also, I'm keeping my Skype open, so if it pops up every now and again, but if we go offline or something, you can call me on Skype and say, oh, Maharaj, you're talking to the walls. You know? Nice walls.
So everybody is muted except for me and you right now.
Okay. So which paragraph are we on? The Lord visited many important places?
Yes.
Also, about yesterday's class, a couple things. Srivas and Srinivas, I have a hard time too. Somebody who spoke a little Sanskrit told me that Shri is Lakshmi, Vas is residence. So Srivas would be like the house of Lakshmi, the palace of Lakshmi. And Srinivas would be like the home. It makes it like a little more intimate. And sometimes, very commonly, the names go back and forth for somebody. So I also have this confusion. I think Srivas Pandit usually, maybe somebody clarified this, Srivas Pandit usually refers to, you know, Navadweep, the Panchatattva, like Lord Chaitanya's uncle, I guess, that was his age, his relationship. But the word Srinivas may be somebody else, also Srinivas Pandit, you know. A little unclear. As far as the Kartals go, in Manipur, they're very traditional. Even now, they maintain a lot of traditional culture. And the drums, and one of the things they do, the Kartals they make there, there are certain families that make the Kartals. And they have smaller ones the ladies play, which I think are good quality. But the bigger ones the men's play in the Kirtan Ras are extremely incredible. They're about 10 inches across and a little bit cupped, maybe about 3 inches. And they play them, and they use gold and silver in them. I tapped one time and just held it, and it kept on ringing, I think, for about 2 minutes after I hit it. 2 minutes later, I could still hear, you know, the mild ringing of the things. So they have incredible ability in Kartals. You want to get a pair of Kartals, Manipuri Kartals. Okay, and then Lord Chaitanya took sannyas, and of course that's described, I think Vidagda gave some really incredible things about it yesterday, but it was so incredible, the whole description in Chaitanya Bhagavad, I won't go into, but it's really incredible, you know, about the whole sannyas. Then after that, of course, he took sannyas, and he said, the Lord visited many important places on the way to Puri. He visited the temple of Gopinathji, who had stolen condensed milk for his devotees, Srimadavindapuri. Since then, Didi Gopinathji is well known as Shirachora Gopinath. The Lord relished the story with great pleasure. Yeah. So Madhavanapuri is not only our possession. This is the pastime of Madhavanapuri. Other people, groups also claim Madhavanapuri as their acharya and everything else like that. The Lord relished this story with great pleasure. The propensity of stealing is there even in the absolute consciousness. But because this propensity is exhibited by the absolute, it loses its perverted nature and thus becomes worshipable even by Lord Chaitanya on the basis of the absolute consideration that the Lord and his stealing propensity are one and identical. The story of Gopinachi is vividly explained in Chaitanya Charitamrita by Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami. After visiting the temple of Shirshur Gopinath of Remuna at Balasur in Orissa, the Lord proceeded towards Puri, and on the way visited the temple of Shakshi Gopal, who appeared as a witness in the matter of two Brahmin devotees' family quarrel. The Lord heard the story of Shakshi Gopal with great pleasure, because he wanted to impress upon the atheists that the worshipable deity in the temple approved by the great acharyas are not idols, as alleged by men with a poor fund of knowledge. The deity in the temple is the arch-incarnation of the personality of Godhead, and thus the deity is identical with the Lord in all respects. Wow, this is interesting. He responds to the proportion of the devotee's affection for him. In the story of Shakshi Gopal, in which there was a family misunderstanding by two devotees of the Lord, the Lord, in order to mitigate the turmoil as well as to show specific... You're lost in here, turmoil as well as specific favor to his servitors, traveled from Vrindavan to Vidyanagar, a village in Orissa, in the form of his archi-incarnation. From there, the deity was brought to Kutuk, and thus the temple of Shakshi Gopal is even today visited by thousands of pilgrims on the way to Jagannath Puri. The Lord stayed overnight there and began to proceed toward Puri. On the way, his sannyas rod was broken by Nityananda. The Lord became apparently angry with him about this and went alone to Puri, leaving his companions behind. So one story here, in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, there is a description of Lord Chaitanya traveling. He met, I think it's the story when he was with Ramananda Roy, and they were talking to each other, and then it said that he, maybe every day, or at least the last meeting, was in the temple of Hanuman. So Hanuman was listening to the whole conversation, which is kind of interesting because Hanuman was able to hear the Bhagavad Gita. He was up on the flagstaff, so he heard all these conversations between Ramananda Roy and Lord Chaitanya as Krishna and Arjuna. So maybe, again, if the conversations between Ramananda Roy and Lord Chaitanya occurred in the temple of Hanuman, he also heard that. Maybe it's some benediction he has to be able to hear these things. But I think it's a purport there, but it's one purport, where Prabhupada says that Hanumanji is worshipped in almost all Indian towns, kind of like irregardless of caste or creed. Everybody appreciates Hanuman, and nobody should disrespect the great devotee Hanuman. Then Prabhupada says, there is a very nice deity of Hanuman next to the Govindaji temple. This deity of Hanuman formerly was with Gopal deity, but when the Gopal deity left to become Shakshi Gopal, this Hanuman moved to the site of Govindaji. So, of course, this happened before, Chaitanya Charitamrita was written. How long ago it happened, I don't know, this whole story of Shakshi Gopal. But that time Hanuman moved. So when I heard that, I was thinking, well, where is that Hanuman, So then Radharaman Goswami was giving lecture and was traveling in Houston. He said, oh, he's just up on the right as you go up towards the Govindaji temple on the right side. So next time we were in Vrindavan, he started walking up and then turned right, and there's a temple there. And it's called Singhapur Hanuman. So if you go to Vrindavan, there's a main road down below the Govindaji temple, and off to your right you see in front of you. If Govindaji temple and the road up to it are on your left, off to your right you can see the Venkateshwar temple. So if you head up that road to the Govindaji temple, on the right side, you turn right, there's a temple. It's not very big. It's maybe like 100 feet from the main road. And it's called Singhapur Hanuman. And it's run by one society. It has a pujari. He changed to a younger man recently. And many people are very active, not very big. You go right inside, and there's Hanuman. And he's like one of these kind of deities who are in, what's it called, bas relief. It's like maybe like about a 5 foot tall stone by about 4 foot wide. And then the Hanuman is like, you know, sticks out from the stone like that. And they take care of him. They have a blanket on him in the winter and stuff like that, you know. And so the story is that, and I guess it's the one that Prabhupada's talking about, and Prabhupada gave such like emphasis to him. He said, it's a very nice Hanuman. So I don't know any more, but it's so very nice. So anyway, this Hanuman, who used to be Sakshi Gopal's companion, the story is that Aurangzeb, you know, was very incensed by the Hindus worshipping Govindaji. And so he sent, of course, his soldiers and his workmen to destroy the temple, you know. And so they started destroying it. And you can imagine what it was like. It wasn't too far from the Jamuna. It was beautiful forest around there. It was going to be hundreds of people, thousands of people who loved Govindaji and were serving him. But there were soldiers there to keep them back, and the workmen were just smashing everything. Even now, if you go into the temple, you can see that the the faces have been carved off, all the beautiful, you know, artwork, because it's sacrilegious to have the face of somebody in art, you know, by Hindus. So anyway, I always wondered, why do they just take off the top five stories? Of course, that's bad enough, you know. The top five stories must have been beautiful, like that. How a gopi, a Manjari, worships Krishna. Rupa Manjari is offering to Krishna this temple. You know, such a loss. You know. So anyway, but they just took the top five stories down. There's three stories left, which still give us some nice experience. You know. So by the back of my mind, I was always wondering, why do they just stop like that? You know? So the story they tell you at the Singapore Hanuman Temple is that they were taking this down day after day, and people were lamenting, pleading, and everything else, but they couldn't stop him. But finally, then the Singapore Hanuman just couldn't take it anymore. So finally, he gave this big roar. It's called Hunkar, and that's why I think he's called Singapore. He just roared like a lion, and he came out of the deity, and everybody—the people, the soldiers, the workmen, they saw all these Brijbasi monkeys coming, like, you know. I guess dozens and dozens of these monkeys. And their lead was this big monkey. Nobody ever seen such a big monkey in Vrindavan before, you know. And they just ran right to the temple. They went right up the sides of the temple. They started biting the workmen, throwing them off, ripping off their ears. You know, and the soldiers were being attacked and everybody else. So all the Hindus just, you know, ran away in complete terror. And the Aurangzeb, or whoever it was at that point, decided, okay, you know, five out of eight is good enough, and that way the temple was saved. You know? So if you go to Govindaji next time, go up the road and turn right and pay your obeisances to Singapore Hanuman. He has a lot of bells and nice prasad. Oh, Ramananda, are you still there?
Yes, it just takes me a while then.
Yeah.
Mute.
Okay, it's okay? The audio is clear?
The audio is clear. It's just you do have a lag about every 2 minutes for about 5 seconds. But I think it's definitely coming something from your connection because everything else is fine. But anyway, it's okay. Everybody is here. We have 21 devotees right now.
Okay. I get a lag ear side too. I think it's the connection here. I'm only like about 20 feet from the hot spot, but a little bit. Okay, so we can go on now. In the case of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, So Lord Chaitanya, of course, all this story, I won't go into details, but there's so much explanation in Chaitanya Charitamrita about all this. At Puri, when he, Lord Chaitanya, entered the temple of Jagannath, he became at once saturated with transcendental ecstasy and fell down on the floor of the temple in unconsciousness. The custodians of the temple could not understand the transcendental feats of the Lord, But there was a great learned pandit named Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya who was present. And he could understand the Lord's losing his consciousness upon entering the Jagannath temple was not an ordinary thing. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was the chief appointed pandit in the court of the king of Orissa, Maharaj Prataparudra. He was attracted by the youthful luster of Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and could understand that such a trance was only rarely exhibited and only then by the topmost devotees who were already transcendental on the transcendental plane in complete forgetfulness of material existence. It's a little bit interesting. Maharaj Prataparudra, he was not just an ordinary king. He was like an emperor. He was king of Orissa, which is big enough. And beyond that, of course, he was also king of Madras. So if you know a little bit about Indian geography, I guess this is something like a landmass about the size of California, yeah, with a lot more people, maybe six times the population density of California. And his power in the south, his viceroy in the south was Ramananda Roy. So Ramananda Roy also wasn't, again, an ordinary person. You know, basically, we're talking about something like, I don't know how you compare it, like, you know, the governor of California with full military power, you know, separate, you know, in charge of all, and then it was, you know, a whole thing like that. So, and he was powerful enough to stop the Muslim invasion, which says a lot. He actually stopped them in great battles and stuff like that. And again, he wasn't a sleeping king. When it came time for the battle, he was there, you know, whacking away with steel on steel and, you know, saber in your face. So he was when you met this guy, he was somebody, you know, who could fight, you know, was a very, very interesting person, you know. So Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, Prabhupada said, was a Sabha Pandit. He was the Acharya for the whole university system like that, everything else like that. He Gopinathacharya said, there's not a second scholar in all of India on your level. As far as I understand, he's an incarnation of the Brihaspati, like that. And so even now, if you go to the University of California, of course they have 1 million books between all their different branches, but one of the libraries at Berkeley is called the Bancroft Library, and it's a very nice, beautiful old library, but it's their rare book collection. And so they have, for example, like if not all, most of the original manuscripts of Mark Twain. And if you have proper authority, you can ask for these books. And they bring them out, and they put them like on a little it's a tilted book reader. The person who brings them out has special gloves on. And there's a space for maybe like 40, 50 people to read like that. And they give you a bamboo page turner. So you don't even touch the pages, so there's no acid on the books. And they have books there by Vasudeva Sarvabhauma. They have actual manuscripts. I don't know if they're written by him, but at least they're very old. Because he was doing, for example, incredible, as I understand, incredible descriptions of logic. Well, what's the use of that? Well, now if you're trying to divide up information on a computer so you can have rapid access to it, and all these systems of logic are extremely, you know, valuable. You know, for example, if I have 1 million records for all the food that Cisco has to distribute by his system all over the United States, and I want to look for something, and I start every time at the top of my 1 million items, forget it. It'll take like, even for a computer, it will take it like maybe like, you know, 3 seconds or 4 seconds, 5 seconds, which really needs to add up. So there's all these systems of logic that Sarvabhauma was generating for the empire, how to divide up information to different systems of access. So he was an incredible scholar, an incredible person. But along with that, he had some, you know, knowledge of rasa shastras and all these things. So he appreciated Lord Chaitanya then was on this level. Yeah. He asked, where does it say then? Yeah. Only a liberated soul could show such a transcendental feat. And the Bhattacharya, who was vastly learned, could understand this in light of the transcendental literature with which he was familiar. He therefore asked the custodians of the temple not to disturb the unknown sannyasi, because I guess they're about to beat him. He asked them to take the Lord to his home so he could be further observed in his unconscious state. The Lord was at once carried to the home of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, who at that time had sufficient power of authority due to his being the Sabha Pandit, or the state dean of the faculty in Sanskrit literatures. The learned pandit wanted to scrutinizingly test the transcendental feats of Lord Chaitanya, because often unscrupulous devotees imitate physical feats in order to flout transcendental achievements just to attract innocent people and take advantage of them. A learned scholar like the Bhattacharya can detect such imposters, and when he finds them out, he at once rejects them. In the case of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the Bhattacharya tested all his symptoms in the light of shastras. He tested as a scientist, not as a foolish sentimentalist. He observed the movements of the stomach, the beating of the heart, and the breathing of the nostrils. He also felt the pulse of the Lord and saw that all his bodily activities were in complete suspension. When he put a cotton swab before the nostrils, he found that there was a slight breathing as the fine fibers of cotton moved slightly. Thus he came to know the Lord's unconscious trance was genuine, and he began to trust him and treat him in the prescribed fashion. But Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu could only be treated by a special way. He would respond only to the resounding of the holy names of the Lord by his devotees. Okay, all together. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare
Krishna,
Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, 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 Hare Hare. His special treatment was unknown to Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, because the Lord was still unknown to him. When the Bhattacharya saw him for the first time in the temple, he simply took him to be one of the many pilgrims. This is interesting, because as I understand, it was Chicago Temple, that one person would come and to the temple, and he would cry when he was looking at the different pictures of Krishna, and sometimes he would roll on the ground in ecstasy, and sometimes he would take one tear from his eye and put it on the foot of the picture of Krishna on his foot, you know. And so the devotees didn't know what to do. Is this guy really genuinely advanced devotee or this or that? So Prabhupada told him to test like a scientist. He said when he's rolling on the ground, you kick him in the head. and if he complains, that means he's not in trance. Like that. So it's kind of, we see the difference between the time of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya and the time of Srila Prabhupada, and how the acharyas, they know how to adjust things in terms of time, place, and circumstance. So Prabhupada didn't suggest testing his pulse, feeling his breath, putting a cotton swab, but Prabhupada suggested just kick the guy in the head. If he complains, yeah, okay, that means he's not in a trance. So as I understand that the devotees were kind of hesitant to do this, but probably the news reached the guy, he stopped coming to the temple, I guess. You know. Okay. Later it was disclosed that Bhattacharya also came from Navadvip. I think he was classmate of Nilambara Chakrabarty. He says here, yeah. It was understood from him that Nilambara Chakrabarty, the maternal grandfather of Lord Chaitanya, happened to be a class fellow of the father of Sarvabhauma. The father of Sarvabhauma. That means that Sarvabhauma was the age of Lord Chaitanya's father, not his grandfather. Yeah. In that sense, the young sannyasi, Lord Chaitanya, evoked paternal affection from the Bhattacharya. Bhattacharya was a professor of many sannyasis in the order of Shankara Sampradaya, and he himself also belonged to that cult. As such, the Bhattacharya desired that the young sannyasi, Lord Chaitanya, also hear from him about the teachings of Vedanta. It's interesting because here, it's very nice, because here we see a grihastha is given proper respect, by sannyasis. So this is the thing, Prabhupada says in Nectar of Instruction, our first book, text number 3, I think, Dharmasya hi apavargasya anartavrittayo apakalpate, that the devotees should know the basic principles of varnashram. So it appears that we don't have to go into too much detail because we're devotees, and so we have devotional relationships, madhyamadhikari, uttamadhikari, arti, kirtan, and also because we have some sensitivity, intelligence from the Bhagavatam, we can pick up enough to make nice decisions about how to deal in terms of our varnas and our ashrams. But then particularly how sannyasis deal with grihasthas and other things, etiquette. Because for example, in San Jose, I'm on the Vyasa-san there, and Vaisheshika comes in. So he received second initiation the same time I received first initiation from Prabhupada. He's obviously, so advanced compared to me in terms of his maturity of his Sankirtan realization, so many things. I think by age, he's a little younger than I am. By ashram, I'm in a superior position. So I always remember this one very nice citation. Prabhupada says, there's no difference between the grihastha fully engaged in devotional service and the man in the renounced order of life. But because of formal austerities, the sannyasi is given more formal respect. Okay, formality. So when Vaisheshika comes in, then I stop the class, he pays his obeisances to me, I do my obeisances to Vyasa-san, and then I make sure immediately he has a proper seat, like that, of course. And from that point on, defer to him, in terms of the class, and of course he offers you, no, Marge, you go on with the class, you like that, and so on. And it's very satisfying then. Everybody has their proper, position. And we can go ahead with these discussions and investigations in a very effective fashion like that. Varnashram Dharma is that psychosocial system which accelerates the evolution of the transcendental qualities of the spirit soul. Okay.
Maharaj?
Yeah.
I got lost, and then Madan Mohan just sent a little note that said, did we skip a paragraph?
Yeah, looks like it. Well, I don't know. The paragraph, let's see. Yeah, no, I don't know. The pilgrims. The paragraph you have here is the one we're on now.
Oh, are you actually looking at my screen?
I'm looking at your screen.
Oh, okay. So, let's start.
Yeah. The last paragraph we did was he thought it'd be one of the pilgrims.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. So in the meantime, the companions of the Lord, who reached the temple a little after him, heard of the Lord's transcendental feats and his being carried away by the Bhattacharya. Another point, if you go to YouTube and look up Nilachala Mahaprabhu, at least, what's it called? Nimai of Nadia is there with subtitles and without subtitles. And I guess Nilachala Mahaprabhu is also there. And these two are, of course, fantastic movies. In some ways, I would say the two best movies I've ever seen on Earth. And, of course, some details aren't completely accurate. There's so many. And, of course, there's this whole little pastime of Nityananda and everybody coming like that. So you can see that, and you can also give people those links to see these two movies. Nilachala Mahaprabhu, of course, is these pastimes. The pilgrims at the temple were still gossiping about the incident, but by chance one of these pilgrims had met Gopinathacharya, who was known to Gadadhar Pandit, and from him it was learned that the Lord was lying in an unconscious state at the residence of Sarvabhauma, who happened to be the brother-in-law of Gopinathacharya. All the members of the party were introduced by Gadadhar Pandit to Gopinathacharya, who took them all to the houses of the Bhattacharya, where the Lord was lying unconscious in a spiritual trance. All the members then chanted loudly the holy name of Lord Hari as usual, and the Lord regained his consciousness. After this, Bhattacharya received all the members of the party, including Lord Nityananda, and asked him to become his guests of honor. The party included the Lord, went for a bath in the sea, and the Bhattacharya arranged for their residence and meals at the house of Kashi Mishra. Gopinathacharya, his brother-in-law, also assisted. There were some friendly talks about the Lord's divinity between the two brother-in-laws, and in this argument, Gopinathacharya, who knew the Lord before, now tried to establish the Lord as the personality of Godhead. And the Bhattacharya tried to establish him as one of the great devotees. Both of them argued from the angle of vision of authentic Shastras and not from the strength of sentimental vox populi. Populi? I guess it means common voice. Gossip. The incarnations of God are determined by authentic Shastras and not by popular votes. foolish fanatics. Because Lord Chaitanya was an incarnation of God. In fact, foolish fanatics have proclaimed so many so-called incarnations of God in this age without referring to authentic scriptures. Vasarvabhauma Bhattacharya and Gopinathacharya did not indulge in such foolish sentimentalism. On the contrary, both of them tried to establish or reject his divinity on the strength of authentic Shastras. So you can think of, I think in the movie it shows this, and also in the dialogue in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, you know, Gopinathacharya was getting heavy with Sarvabhauma and saying, you know, because you're like a Maya body, you can't appreciate these things, you know. And the Sarvabhauma was taking it like, kind of smiling and saying, calm down, Gopinath, calm down. And I know I'm a nasty Maya body, but... And so it was. It had this kind of a... It on the basis of Shastra, but like... it's intense, but friendly, strong joking like that between the two of them. Such an incredible, you know, time to be there in Puri with Mahaprabhu and all these things, you know. Maybe if we go on, we won't make it back to Godhead, but maybe we'll make it to Jagannath Puri. Next lifetime, we'll take birth as Mayabadi residents in Jagannath Puri, you know, to satisfy our impersonalism, and then we'll meet Lord Chaitanya there. Later it was discussed that Bhattacharya also came from Navadvip area, and it was understood from him that it was having to be class fellow. Oh my goodness, okay. In that sense, the young sannyasi Lord Chaitanya invoked paternal affection from Bhattacharya. Bhattacharya was a professor of many sannyasis in the order of the Shankara Sampradaya, and he himself also belonged to that cult. As such, the Bhattacharya desired that the Lord, young sannyasi, Lord Chaitanya, also hear from him about the teachings of the Vedanta. Okay. Those who are followers, okay, the screen goes up. Those who are followers of the Shankara cult are generally known as Vedantists. This does not, however, mean that Vedanta is a monopoly study of the Shankara Sampradaya. Vedanta is studied by all the bona fide Sampradayas, but they have their own interpretations. But those in the Shankara Sampradaya are generally known to be ignorant of the knowledge of the Vedantist Vaishnavas. For this reason, the Bhaktivedanta title was first offered to the author by the Vaishnavas. As I understand, Prabhupada was the first person to become Bhaktivedanta, like that, the title. Yeah. And now it's just, of course, other Prabhupada's godbrothers and other Gaudiya sannyasis, they give the title almost automatically to anybody who they give sannyas to, like that, you know. But of course, it's the whole thing in ISKCON. We're like developing the board of examiners, that someone who's taking sannyas. No, I think too is also very nice too, because Prabhupada had this title, as far as I know, before he took sannyas. So I think it's very important for us to develop these titles so that people can be distinguished in terms of their position in ISKCON, in terms of erudition and also devotion. And that way, we won't have to depend upon just political titles, administrative titles, you know, triple president, GBC, but also we'll be able to start developing our society to the point where we can distinguish people that is considered this person, man or woman, or even younger person, is a Bhaktivedanta. So these titles, I think that's why the Board of Examiners hesitated so long to get into this, because it's a big deal to try and get these titles, and then people will start saying, oh, you know, you're trying to minimize Prabhupada. But no, Prabhupada actually, as far as I know, even said he wanted people to have these titles. Prabhupada was a big title. And as I understand, they asked Prabhupada, do you want to also, can we also call you Thakur? And then Prabhupada thought about it and said, no, too soon. So as far as I understand, the title Narottam Das Thakur, you become Thakur when your disciples become Prabhupads, like that. So we've got to all become, hurry up and become, you know, Yeshua, you know, Ramananda Prabhupada, Madan Mohan Prabhupada, Hanapeshakshmi Prabhupada. You've got to hurry up here and get to have thousands of bona fide disciples and do this before we die. And then we can call Prabhupada Thakur. As good as God. Yeah. Okay, so Prabhupada was awarded the title Bhaktivedanta. The Lord agreed to take lessons from Bhattacharya on the Vedanta. And they sat together in the temple of Lord Jagannath. And I have a suspicion they weren't sitting alone. Many other people were also there, of course, also. The Bhattacharya went on speaking continually for 7 days, and the Lord heard him with all attention and did not interrupt. The Lord's silence raised some doubts in the Bhattacharya's heart, and he asked the Lord how it was that he did not ask anything or comment on his explanation of Vedanta. The Lord, this is very interesting because, of course, this is how Lord Chaitanya, the preaching strategy that Lord Chaitanya adopted in this level of, you know, preaching to big professors and this kind of thing, with Prakash Ananda Saraswati, he also did the same thing. He took a humble position, and when the person then asked, well, what's your opinion, then he responded, well, since you asked, he stayed polite, he stayed logical, but at that point then he expressed his idea very clearly. But he didn't do it until the person had been motivated by receiving respect. And Prabhupada, in the terms of the Bhaktivedanta Institute, he gave the same indication. First, wonderful reception, nice place, nice building, everything very nice, and nice prasad. Then discussions after that. And even still, the discussions go on only when the person asks, just to some degree. Other things are there, but many times we give respect to these people until they ask us, and then we don't deviate. Those who are followers of Shankara Kala, the Lord agreed to take, the Lord posed, okay. He asked the Lord how it was he did not say anything. The Lord posed himself before the Bhattacharya as a foolish student and pretended that he heard the Vedanta from him because the Bhattacharya felt that this was the duty of a sannyasi. But the Lord did not agree with his lectures. By this, the Lord indicated that the so-called Vedantists amongst the Shankara Sampradaya or any other Sampradaya who do not follow the instructions of Vyasadeva are mechanical students of the Vedanta. They are not fully aware of that great knowledge. The explanation of Vedanta is given by the author himself in the text of Srimad Bhagavatam. One who has no knowledge of the Bhagavatam will hardly be able to know what the Vedanta says. The Bhattacharya, being a vastly learned man, could follow the Lord's sarcastic remarks on the popular Vedantists. He therefore asked him why he did not ask about any point which he could not follow. The Bhattacharya could understand the purpose of his dead silence for the days he heard him. This showed clearly that the Lord has something else in mind. Thus the Bhattacharya requested him to disclose his mind. I think Ramananda is going to raise the text up here. Okay. Die. It's interesting, too, that, I mean, Bhattacharya must have been preaching Mayavad philosophy, and I was, of course, other people were there, you know, listening. But Lord Chaitanya didn't say anything. He let him go on preaching this Mayavadi, you know, stuff for 7 days. You know, 7 days, you know. So in terms of, because people have been criticized, for example, in the Bhaktivedanta Institute for allowing the other, you know, materialistic scientists and stuff to talk, organizing congresses with them, allowing them to talk. and not criticizing them. But this is the point that's been raised, that the Lord Chaitanya's own example, and Prabhupada too, many times, was to allow them to speak, and then when they brought it up, or when it became our turn to talk, then to make the rebuttal like that. Upon this being asked, the Lord spoke as follows. My dear sir, I can understand the meaning of the Vedanta, of the sutras, like Jamari Asya Yataha. It's also in Srimad Bhagavatam 111. Of course, it's the first, it's the second verse? No, the first verse. No, second verse of Vedanta Sutra. Shastra Yoni Tadvat and the Tato Brahma Jignasa of the Vedanta Sutra. But when you explain them in your own way, it becomes difficult for me to follow them. The purpose of the sutras is already explained in them, but your explanations are covering them with something else. You do not purposely take the direct meaning of the sutras, but indirectly give your own interpretation. The Lord thus attacked all Vedantists who interpret the Vedanta Sutra fashionably, according to their limited power of thinking, to serve their own purpose. Such indirect interpretations of authentic Vedic literature, like the Vedanta Sutra, are hereby condemned by the Lord. The Lord continued, Srila Vyasadeva has summarized the direct meanings of the mantras in the Upanishads in the Vedanta Sutra. Unfortunately, you do not take their direct meaning. Excuse me. You indirectly interpret them in a different way. The authority of the Vedas is unchallengeable and stands without any question of doubt. And whatever is stated in the Vedas must be accepted completely. Otherwise, one challenges the authority of the Vedas. The conch shell and cow dung are both bone and stool of two living beings. But because they have been recommended by the Vedas as pure, people accept them as such because of the authority of the Vedas. Okay. The idea is that one cannot see this, the Prabhupada says, the idea is that one cannot see this imperfect reason. The idea is that one cannot see his imperfect reason above the authority of the Vedas. The orders of the Vedas must be obeyed as they stand, without any mundane reasoning. The so-called followers of the Vedic injunctions make their own interpretations of the Vedic injunctions unless they establish different parties and sects of the Vedic religion. The Buddha directly denied the authority of the Vedas, and he established his own religion. Only for this reason, the Buddhist religion was not accepted by the strict followers of the Vedas. But those who are so-called followers of the Vedas are more harmful than the Buddhists. The Buddhists have the courage to deny the Vedas directly, but the so-called followers of the Vedas have no courage to deny the Vedas, although indirectly they disobey the injunctions of the Vedas. Lord Chaitanya condemned this life. Of course, this is very much related to to the Isha Upanishad with the Bhaktivedanta purports. Because the Isha Upanishad is the only thing we have from Srila Prabhupada, the only book, which is Shruti, you know, directly spoken by the Lord. Everything else we have is Smriti, which is the comprehension of the sages of that Shruti. The Mahabharata, Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, these are all Smriti. So they actually place our statements on the direct authority of the Vedas, because, of course, by the Vedas, what's the one now? Prabhupada mentions it in the purport to the first few texts there. It's in one of the Upanishads, it says that the Mahabharata, then the Puranas, and the Itihasas are the fifth Veda. You know? So people say, well, that's added later. It's not a part of the original Vedas. But it's there, and we take the authority of that then to establish. I think in at least two places it's established that the Puranas are actually the fifth Veda. Okay. And so, but the Isha Upanishad probably gave it to us. And so, of course, the first verse, Om Purnamadaha Purnamidam, so the invocation. And then the first verse, Isha Vashnamidam Saravam, are very, very important verses for our preaching, our Sankirtan. They're quoted many times, or quoted in Upadesha Amrita. in the section about simple living and high thinking. And then later on, the verse that I try and always remember and recommend for Bhakti Shastri is 15th verse. Hiranmayena patrena satya shya pihitam mukam tatvam purusham apavrenu satya dharmaya drishyate. Hiranmayena, Hiranya, golden, mayena, energy. Patrena means a cover. Like I think an envelope in Hindi is patra. Hiranmayena patrena satya shya pihitam mukam. Mukam, face. Your face is covered by this golden effulgence. Tatvam pusham apavrenu dharma satchaya drishyate. Drishyate. Please remove this effulgence from your faithful devotee, your faithful dharmi, and let me see your face. So the verse is so strong, it's so clear, you know, about how, you know, you have a face, it's covered by this effulgence, please let me see your face. It's interesting too, because the text number is 15, Yasopanishad, and if we go to 15:15 in the Bhagavad Gita, it's the verse where it says, Vidaischa sarver aham eva vedyo vedanta vid veda vid eva chaham. So you can be challenged. Do you know Sanskrit? And we can honestly say, I have a working knowledge. I have a working knowledge. And the person we're dealing with may not have a working knowledge. He may have a great technical knowledge, but he doesn't have it as a practical thing. And do you know the Vedas? Vidaischa sarveraham eva vedyo. Yeah, I know the Vedas. The purpose of the Vedas is to know Krishna, and I know Krishna. So very useful. Not just like words and logic, although sometimes those are necessary to get a foot in the door, but also very practical. That yes, we have contact with the Upanishad, the Vedas, and we know the direct meaning, and in the Bhagavad Gita also like that, and we practice it. And so yeah, we be humble. We don't have the big technical Sanskrit knowledge that you do. And we're very interested in developing our knowledge of Sanskrit, so please become our friend and guide us in how to go ahead. Please appreciate how our guru and acharya is teaching us Sanskrit, and because he does, he likes it. But he's also always remembering that you haven't got to know a lot, but you should apply what you know. And so if you know Krishna, you know, do you know Sanskrit? Yes. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Yeah, that's the greatest of all Sanskrit mantras. So this, what do we do here? Okay. The Vedic injunctions. The example given of cow dung, where are we here? The idea is that one cannot set his imperfect reason above this. Lord Chaitanya condemned this life. The examples given by Lord Chaitanya of cow dung and conch shell are very much appropriate in this connection. If one argues that since cow dung is pure, the stool of a learned brahmana is still more pure, his argument will not be accepted. Cow dung is accepted, and the stool of a highly qualified brahmana is rejected. The Lord continued. So, okay, so I guess then whoever's going to read next can go ahead then continuing here. And very nice. This biography is so nice. You know, I go through it every now and again, and go through it like that. But for today, maybe we can stop here. Anybody else has any comments, you know, about Lord Chaitanya's biography, or whether they actually think the stool of a high-class Brahmin is actually purer than that of cow dung? We're open to debate.
Okay, I did unmute everybody. So, please, go ahead, Bruce. Anyone has a question?
I have a question about, you were talking about the various titles that would be given, and you mentioned that others may in the future be called Prabhupada. I've never read it, I've never even really discussed it, but maybe sort of my thought always was that Prabhupada would always be Prabhupada and the only one that would have that title. And I have no other reason, just than my own sentiment, just kind of living off here on a little island. without a lot of discussion with other devotees outside, but I guess that's sort of what I'd always thought in my mind, that was maybe a title within our society that Prabhupada would always have. It just seems like that's his name. We don't see it as just a title. But when we say Prabhupada, it doesn't seem like that would ever change, but maybe it would. I was wondering if you could say a little more about that.
I'm kind of on the same level as you, like just kind of dealing with it. And I don't think it's something that's going to happen very quickly. And, you know, it's going to happen, I think, when we're all, if we're still around, maybe we'll come back again. You know, when we're like 5 years old, or maybe there's something, the discussion will go on like that. But in terms of references, other devotees say this too, that the title that Prabhupada selected for himself formally was His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, Founder Acharya of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. And he had it on all of his books. He required every single one of our centers to have that on the center, ISKCON Center, so-and-so. And he said, every single correspondence which goes out from our society must have the letterhead of ISKCON in my name, like that. And then people I know who knew Prabhupada, like Hansa Duda, they said that when people didn't put that on there, Prabhupada was heavy with them. He would fry them, like he just shows you're trying to minimize my position, you know. And so that, as far as I understand, my experience like this, he's saying, is that the title Prabhupada wanted for himself, you know, okay. Founder Acharya. And also there's, I think when the corporation was formed in New York, he said the same thing, you know, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami will be the founder Acharya of International Society for so on and so on. And he said, nobody will share or occupy this position during or after his life. Like that. So that was like very clear, you know, that the Prabhupada is forever. You know, nobody else is going to share that position and nobody else is going to occupy it. In terms of Prabhupada, because Prabhupada, of course, he established this title, Bhaktivedanta, should be awarded. And he said people who've gone through the first six cantos, okay, Bhakti Shastri, Bhakti, what's the word, Bhakti Bhai Baba, he established for the first six cantos. And for the whole Bhagavatam, he established the title, one letter, as Bhaktivedanta. And he even discussed it, like other letters to Hansa Duda and people like that, that the title could be applied, and his disciples, the letter to Hansa Duda, he said, you're already beyond this, you know, like that. And then Bhakti Sarvabhauma was for people, as I understand, probably later on, for people who made a thorough reading of Chaitanya Charitamrita and had a comprehension of the content, like that. Mm-hmm. So in some ways, the other side of the coin comes up, is that maybe rather than, what's the word, like minimizing Prabhupada, we're minimizing devotees. You know? And we're actually, and if you go out and start seeing ordinary people and stuff like that, and other swamis and other groups, and you travel, you begin to realize, wow, you know, the devotees in ISKCON really are not ordinary people, you know, like that. You know? And so what are these titles? And then the more I go through Nectar of Instruction, I read it again and again, of course. You can grab the tail of the elephant, you can grab the foot of the elephant, you can grab the nose of the elephant, grab something. And because I'm a minimalist and traveling, I take Nectar of Instruction and going through it again and again.
Maharaj, can I say, Maharaj, any more comments here?
Yeah, and finish here, and then please everybody. So going through this like Nectar of Instruction, for example, again and again, it seems like, yeah, Prabhupada does define different levels for different titles. Basically, he really seems to be saying that Nectar of Instruction, that for Harinam Diksha, everybody should should pay obeisance, you should say Hari Bol Prabhu, you should be respectful, touch your hands to your forehead. For Gayatri second initiation, then you should offer your obeisances, you know, bowing down with your, like that. And for a sannyasi Goswami, who he seems to be like formally putting on the level of Uttamadhikari, you should offer dandavats. Now, of course, that seems as a general thing. Two more comments. Okay. In general, in our culture, of course, we have Rupa Goswami, Prabhupada, Jiva Goswami Prabhupada, and it's on that level of a Sampradaya Acharya. Finally, there's a story of Hari Story tells that they came to some temple, and it was the Prabhupada's quarters, you know, designated quarters, were a little bit smaller than normal. And so Hari Story was putting Prabhupada's things, you know, his translating things, his personal grooming things, everything, you know, where he, Prabhupada normally had them. And then it Prabhupada had a picture of Bhaktisiddhanta on the desk someplace normally right in front of him. But because of the size of the desk and everything, he didn't know exactly where to put it. So Hari Story said that Srila Prabhupada said, oh, you should put the picture of Srila Prabhupada here. Because he saw his dilemma. And Hari Story said he was confused at the picture of Srila Prabhupada. And then Srila Prabhupada kind of realized what he was thinking. And Prabhupada laughed and looked at him and said, you have your Srila Prabhupada, I have my Srila Prabhupada. Like that. So in that sense, that yeah, it is a title which can't. This is, again, I'm totally open to discussion on this. You know, this is what I'm basing my opinion on. That yeah, someday when somebody does come to that level, he can be Bhaktivedanta, he can be Prabhupada, and then as far as I understand, the title Thakur is something Prabhupada deserves, but he can only receive it when we show that by following him we've come to that level of that. That's my opinion. Okay, horrible.
Hey, say Ramananda, is everybody being cut off, or is it just some of us? Like, his big spaces when he talks, like in between.
It gets that, you know, there's just that lag. Sorry, something about the connection.
No, it's not. I'm not hearing a lag. I'm hearing his big cut off. Like, he'll be cut off for 2 seconds, then he'll go back on. I'm just wondering, am I the only one getting that? Anyway.
No, everybody is getting the same thing.
Oh, yeah, well, we're missing a percentage of what he's saying, but I was going to just... The history of Bhaktivedanta. Prabhupada actually, although he said he got that, but Sridhar Maharaj gives the... He wanted to take sannyas from Sridhar Maharaj, and Sridhar Maharaj wouldn't give it to him. He had to take sannyas from Keshav Pragyan because Sridhar Maharaj was very close to Prabhupada's family. He was really interested. So apparently, this is what Sridhar Maharaj says. Now anyone could find some other historical document, but that he called him Bhaktisiddhanta first, Keshav Pragyan, and that caused a huge uproar in the Gaudiya Math. So then Sridhar Maharaj suggested, well, just change it to Bhaktivedanta. That's how he ended up with Bhaktivedanta. And apparently other people were being called Bhaktivedanta before that. And there's Narayan Maharaj says, you know, he got sannyas and he was called Bhaktivedanta Narayan Maharaj, you know, several years before that. And I'm not saying that as a follower of Narayan Maharaj Trinity.
How is our connection?
Bhaktivedanta
vomit. How's
well,
our connection?
You were saying that the connection was you were saying that he was the first person to become Bhaktivedanta or something.
See, that's what I've heard. I'm informed. Yeah.
Oh yeah, right. It's just not historically. And we do have Prabhupada. You have Siddhasarup. And should take heed. He's been called Prabhupada for years already. So. Anybody can just get up and call himself anything.
You can call yourself God if you want to.
yeah, we're taking applications. You have the audio call.
I had also heard that Prabhupada was being called Swamiji, and then they do some conversation with one of his disciples, and Prabhupada said at that time, well, that's a third class title. He says, well, what's a first class title? And he says, Prabhupada is a first class title. And he said, can we call you that? And there was some pause, and he said, all right. So it wasn't that he did it himself, he just agreed with it because his disciples asked him to do it.
Yes, that was Govinda Dasi who asked the question.
Hmm. Das and Udas and Udas and Udas. There we go. Nacham Vipra, Naham Vipra, Nacha Narapatir, Napi Vaishu, Nashudro, Naham Varni, Nacha Pihapatir, Kintu Prodya, Nikolananda Purnam, Ratdita Dare, Gopi Pada Dupada, Gopi Pada, Gopi Pada Bharatu, Dasa Dasa Dasaha. Yeah. Whatever title we have, the bigger the title, it means more of a servant. Wow. I'm not ready for that. I still want honor and respect. I want to get the ice cream first. So anyways, it's very, very nice reading this biography here in San Jose. I moved. Is my connection better now?
Yeah, your connection is better. You know, it was strange because nobody else is anyway. Okay.
Yeah, I moved next to Hari Lilla here. We're sitting in his office now. We're right next to the Wi-Fi spot. Yeah, and so I think it's picked up now. I think everything was going pretty much, but it was slow. It's kind of like these things, they store it up and then they deliver it later. Yeah, yeah. It's interesting this way. It's a teleconference.
From what I know, I
can. Yeah.
Hare Krishna.
Yeah.
Can I make a comment on one of the points that you made regarding relationships about in Varnashram?
Yes.
You mentioned, please. This is Mata Gandhari, thank you.
Oh yes, I know.
You mentioned that through interaction we already know that in ISKCON, but I think we are far from that, because I just posted this, I don't know if you can see that, that's one of my slides from Brahma Vaivat Purana, about various interaction among various relatives, what to speak of in general society. Can you see that? The second half is more relevant. The first half is simple.
Husband,
the
father,
reason is, like the brother, sister, which was the example is Queen Kunti, who is auntie. The main prominent difference is between the sons of a sister and the sons of a brother. For example, the brother's sons are almost considered like family because they're one from one surname, and brother's son is considered like one own son, whereas a sister's son, like Queen Kunti and Krishna, very different the relationship. In ISKCON we are far from that, and you will be happy to hear that we just created some videos of some small skits on that topic, actually. So we hope that this will gradually be of some help, because the people in the Vedic culture are already following. The reason I'm mentioning this is that these relationships are eternally practiced in the spiritual world as well, as you already know.
Yeah, I was specifically mentioning this idea about this, because the Bhagavatam is full of these things, like you're saying. If we actually read them, we can pick it up. You know, it's nice to have the Prabhupada recommends, for example, Prabhupada recommends Parashara's Dharma Shastra, and his purports, he recommends different things, different other scriptures and books like that. You know? But if we just go through, my point would be, if we just go through and take these things to heart, like if Prabhupada mentions, for example, the Kunti, Krishna. Kunti starts, how does Kunti glorify Krishna? He is her nephew, right? You know.
Yes.
Yeah, so she doesn't start by glorifying his lotus feet on the devotional principle, but she starts where? Nabaya Pankaja. She starts at his navel, his lotus chaya's face, like that, then goes back to his feet. So very, very nice etiquette, adjusting both the Vaishnava and the social relations like that, you know. Because Krishna would feel embarrassed if his aunt started like trying to touch his feet, you know, talking about that. So she starts at his waist, but she comes back around to his feet, like that, you know. So Prabhupada the purport says everything in the round is put in here very nicely like that, you know. So I think it's very nice that we include these. For example, the Varnashram thing, I think it's very nice. Somebody goes through them and picks them up properly, puts them in systematic order. We start taking advantage of the Indian heritage of names for different family members and our responsibilities. My Dija, you know, my Mama. And then also we go ahead and the rituals too. The rituals for haircutting ceremonies, everything else, those are also described in our tradition. But then introduce them as our society grows to the point where we can include them practically in our devotional practices like that. And I see it's happening. What I see right now is ISKCON's coming to this point where we have to start hiring people and paying them to do work. You have to be a non-profit corporation but with paid employees. And it's happening in ISKCON now. But I guess we should go now because it's 12:45 and we're going to go ahead. We have nice programs here in Texas. Actually, we're starting this Bhakti Bhai Baba program. And it's a lot of work getting it organized so it's very systematic. Cause when somebody gets the Bhakti Bhai Baba diploma, it's a lot more, critical? What's the word? Precise in the Bhakti Shastri. The Bhakti Shastri requires a certain level, but Bhakti Bhai Baba, they'd be more strict about how people have developed a certain level of Shastra comprehension and also the devotional principles too. So, I think Abraham Lincoln said, democracy is a terrible form of government, but all the others are so much worse. So I will say now, public on recording, that like any institution, ISKCON is a terrible organization, but all the others are so much worse. My ISKCON, right or wrong. Okay. But it needs a lot of work to get all this together so we can relate together as like Lord Chaitanya and Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya and Gopinathacharya. So thank you all very much, and we'll be back again. What is it? We come back next on next
Tuesday, right?
Tuesday, yeah. And what would we have?
You are like a magnet. So many devotees came today. 26. Right now there's 23, but we had 26. Oh.
Okay, as long as I'm not like a maggot.
No, magnet. Not
people come to eat the dead corpse. Okay. See you here in Goloka.
Jai.
Jai.
Hare
Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Very well.